Life Audio.
Welcome to Empowering Homeschool Conversations, your authority in navigating the world of homeschooling diverse learners. Featuring Peggy Ployer from Sped Homeschool, Annie Yorty from AnnieYorty.com, Leilani Melendez from Living with Eve, Stephanie Buckwalter from eLARP Learning, and Dawn Jackson from Dawn Jackson Educational Consulting and Tutoring. With over 75 years of combined homeschooling expertise, experiences, and perspectives, this group is eager to share their wealth of wisdom to empower your homeschooling journey. So grab your favorite mug, settle in, and get ready for insightful discussions, valuable insights, and practical tips as these experts and their guests dive into the hottest topics in homeschooling. Whether you're a seasoned homeschooler, just considering this path, or anywhere in between, you don't want to miss a minute of these enlightening conversations that will empower your child to thrive in their homeschool environment. Empowering Homeschool Conversations is starting right now. Join us to give your homeschool the power boost it needs to successfully educate the unique learners in your home.
Today, we are going to talk about homeschool fails redeemed by God's grace. And I am super, super excited to be able to share in this conversation with four ladies that you've all met before, because they have been guests on Empowering Homeschool Conversations, but they are coming on now as co-hosts of this show. And we're going to be having some topics like today, where the five of us are going to talk about a specific topic that we think is really, really pertinent to parents who are home educating kids that struggle, so that you just feel encouraged, you feel equipped by our own experiences and just the wealth of information and wisdom that God has given us through our homeschooling journeys. And so I would like to just kind of start out with having just a group discussion, because since we're going to be talking about homeschool fails, and I think there is this general feel that, you know, if I get all my ducks in a row, everything will just work out great. What do you have to say about that, ladies?
Well, I've been homeschooling for over two decades, so I've had some fails.
Yeah, that's a long time. So yes, my philosophy when I first started homeschooling was, oh, if I can just, you know, get a couple years into my belt, then I will just do it perfect the rest of the way. Boy, that did not work because everything just kept changing. And yeah, any input on that as far as conceptions that you had kind of from the beginning?
I think
that got squashed.
My biggest conception or myth was that if I just could find the right curriculum, if I just had the right curriculum, then everything would just flow. If I could learn to be organized, if I had the flow chart, the whiteboards telling me what to do every minute, then, because that was not my strength. So I thought if I could develop and have this perfection in place, then I would be set.
That's a really good point, Don, because I think we think if we can fix what's wrong with us, then other things will turn out better. Annie, you're smiling.
Yeah, well, along those lines about fixing yourself. No, I had the thought in mind when I started homeschooling that this would be a great opportunity to just disciple my kids and, you know, get at the root of issues, whatever, get to know their hearts and all that, and deal with those, you know, stubborn little problems they have. Well, little did I know that's exactly, I think, how God must view me in this situation, because it was as much about God pointing out and training my heart as it was about me doing any of that with my kids. So, it was about discipling them, but it was also about God discipling me.
Yeah. Leilani, you're shaking your head a lot.
Oh, no, I agree. And, because when you ask questions, I'm like, no. Like the changing thing, you brought up the changing with the middle school, like middle school changes, like their hormones jump in there and then that the dynamics change in the household. And then Dawn mentioned myths. And I was thinking, you know, when I first started homeschooling, because I came out of the public school system, there was a little bit of pride because, and then of course it didn't help that everyone's like, oh, you're a teacher, you got this thing down. And there wasn't much help offered to me. You know, nobody was coaching me. No one was discipling me.
Yeah.
Because it was like this intimidation factor. Like she's a teacher, she knows what she's doing. Well, coming from that public school mindset, when I jumped into homeschooling my kids, I was like, if I just do it the way I did it when I was teaching other kids, it'd be fine. No.
That didn't work, huh?
No. And especially when you're homeschooling and your entire reason behind homeschooling is totally different than the purpose with public school schooling. It's totally different. I mean, your approach should be different. And so, yeah.
Yeah.
Totally
yeah,
different. Definitely. Every year, too. I had to keep changing. I had to keep changing.
Right. Yeah.
Because I kept growing.
Yes. Yes. That is true. We kind of look on the negative side sometimes, but on the positive side, we do. We get more refined in who we are. We understand that a little bit more. And I would look at those homeschool moms, you know, and I'm thinking, you know, about our audience right now. If you're just getting started and you're looking at us and going, but if only I was you, I could do this better.
Right.
And I remember having that mindset of looking at all these moms who had homeschooled for years and go, but, you know, but they're the perfect homeschool mom. Me, no.
You know, it's funny you say that because for so long, I've always looked at other homeschool moms. It's been a battle because for me, I'm all like, okay, I was from the public school system. I should know what I'm doing. There's a little bit of pride, but I'm still running into these issues and I should be the perfect homeschool mom. But then again, I start looking at other homeschool moms and I'm like, wait, they're doing it better. What am I not doing? And then I started changing and my self-esteem started going down. But then now, like, it's kind of reversed because, you know, I'm on YouTube and I'm out in the front, you know, the public eye and people are looking at me and thinking I'm the perfect homeschool mom. And I'm like, no, I'm not. I'm really not the perfect homeschool. You see like the best of the best, you know, cause I do all this editing and then, you know, I'm up in front and center. But the reality is that I'm not. And I learned so much more from my clients, from my families that I work for, from people that I interact with from the homeschool co-op. And it's just, it changes your whole perspective because then you realize not everybody's perfect.
Yeah.
Oh, that just plays right into that trap of comparison, you know, whichever side of it you're on, comparing yourself with others is going to lead you down a dark path of either pride or, you know, feeling inadequate. But I mean, we can learn from each other. And I certainly have learned from others. But the comparisons to try to conform to someone else or think you're supposed to conform to that, that's where we run into problems.
Comparison is of the devil.
Yes,
I always absolutely.
Really helpful, actually, in the context of business. But it's, and this is a quote from someone famous in the online marketing world. I don't know who it is, but it's don't compare your beginning to someone else's middle.
End.
Yeah. So you can't, because my whole philosophy starting out was, how bad can you screw up kindergarten? I'm just going to try out homeschooling because I thought, you know, how bad, and I did find out you could, but just been, what I learned was actually when we took the test at the end of the year, my son did great in everything except spelling. And I was like, how can you mess up spelling? And then I realized I never taught him spelling because I thought you just learn spelling as you go. So there was one of my first mistakes. I didn't teach spelling. After that, I taught spelling.
And I think there's so many social pressures. There's familial pressures within families So there's cultures and communities, there's philosophies of homeschooling, right? So as a parent, you're up against all of that. You're hearing, I know when, you know, I'm a little bit older, but when I was homeschooling my children, there was this idea of, are you sure you're the right person for them? Are you sure this is the right setting for them? And then when, like, parents that I work with now, the big thing is they're not working at grade level. Okay, but what are they learning? What skills are they learning? And there's always that pressure of the overwhelming amount of information that's out there, the workshops should we be taking, the curriculum we should be buying. And you'll see this kind of like pros and cons or black and white of the person that's overwhelmed trying to do it all. I've worked with those parents I'm not doing anything. We're just going to unschool here. And that, you know, and there's the beauty in that. But there should be an objective. That's what I teach the co-ops that I work with, the parents that I work with. There should always be an objective. What is my objective? That my child's natural curiosity will blossom and grow. Or I really want them to learn math.
Right. And I think that's really important, Dawn, is like how you set up that goal as well. Because you made it a very broad and beautiful goal versus the more educational type goals that I think we talk about a lot. But when we hold ourselves accountable to something, we have to be able to look at it in the future, like far out in the future, because then it doesn't become a checklist. It becomes a philosophy. It becomes a way of homeschooling, a way of life that we can embrace. And then we can take the good with the not so good and be okay with it at the end of each day. And I think that's really, you know, this conversation and where we want it to go is that things don't happen like instantly perfect. And yes, we got that box checked off and then we can move to the next thing. But sometimes things get really messy and they're messy for a long time, but God can work in and through even the messiness of our lives and our kids and our own hearts, a lot of the stuff we just brought up, and turn it into something beautiful. We will continue this conversation after a short break.
Is it hard to spark meaningful conversations with your kids? Whether you're a homeschool hero, planning activities for the next family vacation, or simply gathering around the dinner table, we've got something that can help. Introducing the Daily Family Conversation Starter by best-selling author Katie Clemens. This remarkable book offers 365 imaginative ways to connect with your children in just 5 minutes each day, with prompts like, "Who made you laugh today?" or "What would you do if you had a tail?" These simple questions open up a world of laughter, curiosity, and deeper connections. From dinner time to sleepy time, the Daily Family Conversation Starter is your key to creating memories that will last a lifetime. Don't wait to transform your family's daily routine into an adventure of discovery and fun. Grab your copy of the Daily Family Conversation Starter today, wherever books are sold.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-497-4410. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-497-4410. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-497-4410.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
This is Empowering Homeschool Conversations, provided by SPED Homeschool, a nonprofit that empowers families to home educate diverse learners. To learn more, visit spedhomeschool.com.
So each of these ladies and I are going to share a little snippet with you of something that we failed at and that God redeemed. And so, so who'd like to go first? Any?
I can go first. I'll go first. Okay.
All right.
Here. So I would say, like I said in the beginning, one of my biggest fails was just overwhelming finding the right curriculum. I really believed if I had the systems in place, the curriculum in place, and I just followed this set of really, you know, rituals, that we would be okay. We would make it. We would strive. I didn't really have that idea of a vision. You know, the Bible says without a vision, the people perish. I really didn't have that vision. I had a desire, and I knew this was the right path. I had married into a family that homeschooled kids, and it was a real natural thing in that family as a community. So I just naturally jumped on that. But having come from the teacher world, I had this idea that, you know, I had to have a teacher plan book, and I had to have things rolled, scrolled out, and the meals prepped, and, you know, morning breakfast was set out the night before. Little did I realize that I was killing myself. And because my expectations were so high, I literally burned out. But I want to go back to curriculum real quick too. So for curriculum, for me, it was like, oh, we're going to do it this way. And I'd buy a curriculum. I'll never forget this Latin program. We were doing a classical plan. And so bought the Latin cards at the homeschool convention, came back with like $1,000 worth of crazy stuff. I remember putting the words up on the board for my daughter to practice every day. She did not learn that way. She did not learn. She refused to look at those cards on the wall. Every day I would see the cards on the wall. I'm a very visual learner. It worked for me, not for her. And so I couldn't figure out what was I doing wrong. And I kept hitting those walls. And honestly, I have to say, you know, the thing that I learned through the most was when I did begin to understand their natural interests and talents, those natural things that motivated them to want to learn. And if I would have just paid attention to her learning styles and learned more about what are learning styles, how does this child learn, it would have been such a smoother transition into teaching each one of them. So that was probably my biggest thing that I did that was the hardest, because first of all, I spent a lot of money. And I want to say, and I share this with parents in workshops, is that oftentimes parents buy curriculum that they like. And I've asked them, well, does your child like that? Is that an interest that your child has? Or is that something that you subconsciously wish you had that someone taught to you? So I think that was probably like my biggest fail. But I didn't know, you know, no shame here. It was a learning curve for me. But looking back now, I think there are simple ways to figure out those questions of who is my child? How do they learn? What motivates them to learn? And how do they take in information the best?
Yeah, that's great, Dawn. Because now I want to point out the redeemed part, because you now as a consultant, mm-hmm. you see that in parents.
Right.
You know, if you would not have had that experience, you would not have had the perspective to be able to share with others. And I think we forget that God goes way beyond just what he's doing in our own homeschool redeem things. And so what a beautiful story.
Thanks so much
for sharing. So Annie, I know you have kind of an educational philosophy kind of story to share with us too. So would you go next?
Yeah, absolutely. The track I was on pretty much from the time I had my first daughter, who has Down syndrome, was that, you know, I really wasn't qualified to meet her educational needs, that I needed those experts to, you know, at the school or the interventionists and all of that, that I wasn't the one who could meet the needs at home. I did know a few people that homeschooled and it looked interesting, but I was just like, no, I couldn't do that. And, you know, and I also was on this track of, well, inclusion is really, really important for her. And I still think that. But I had this idea in my head that homeschooling was the opposite. the exact opposite of inclusion. So I went full bore on the path of inclusion in a regular education classroom in public school. And I started on that when she was like 2 years old, working on preparing the school for that and, you know, got her a placement to that end. We got her placed in that way in our public school. And it went okay. But there was always this element of being on pins and needles a little bit. Like, would she be able to conform to what they wanted so she could, you know, stay there, so she could feel good, so she could learn, that kind of thing. So there was always like a bit of a fear hanging over us that it might turn sour. And then we moved to another state. And well, it did turn sour because that school didn't want her to be in a regular classroom. And let's say I'm persistent. That's the good word for it. Stubborn might be the other word. But, you know, I hung on to my vision for this inclusion in public school. We even went to court. I mean, 2 years of a process of going through that. And sort of in the back of my mind was this, well, plan Z would be I homeschooler if we lose, you know? And so that's kind of where we were. And it turns out we won our court case. Mm. And then we're, you know, that summer after the end of that school year where we had finally won, you know, I knew in my heart that the win was temporary, that, that anything could upset that and land us right back in the same situation. And I was discouraged about that. And I prayed and God really turned my heart to homeschooling. You know, I think he was calling me all along because it was sort of sitting out there on the periphery, but I was ignoring it. And, you know, he just showed me that I could keep fighting this fight year after year after year, but I haven't won their hearts. So it was going to harm Alyssa. And he showed me that at home was really the best place for her. But he had to show me that he was trustworthy. Like, I had to come to believe that he would meet her needs through me and other people maybe, but that he's in charge of meeting those needs and it's not all on me. So, I always share this verse that I have on my screen, my computer screen for 16 years of homeschooling. Faithful is he who calls you, and he'll also bring it to pass, from 1 Thessalonians 5:24, because he did call me to it. And I trusted him, and that was just our theme verse. But of course, I got into homeschooling then, threw myself into trying to do it like public school for a little while. So I'm with you on that. But then I relaxed and got to know more about it. And God just really kept showing me this is so good because we could just learn without trying to push Alyssa, you know, trying to put a square peg into a round hole, essentially. I could teach her the way that she needed to be taught. And I did have to learn what is her learning style, what motivates her to do things, and to learn to be patient myself. But, you know, and the whole thing about like inclusion and socialization, you know, we always hear about that, right? The socialization thing. Well, anyone who's listening now and has ever had a concern about that, that's like just one of the least thing you have to worry about. Homeschooling afforded Alyssa so many more opportunities for what I call really natural inclusion instead of that forced and orchestrated inclusion than she ever would have had in public school. So that was our beginning, but it did take me, it was a little bit of a rocky path for God to get me off my own track. You know, his ways are higher than our ways. And I had to learn that through that couple year experience really with him, to learn that I need to follow him and trust him to provide.
We will continue this conversation after a short break.
Is it hard to spark meaningful conversations with your kids? Whether you're a homeschool hero, planning activities for the next family vacation, or simply gathering around the dinner table, we've got something that can help. Introducing the Daily Family Conversation Starter by best-selling author Katie Clemens. This remarkable book offers 365 imaginative ways to connect with your children in just 5 minutes each day, with prompts like, "Who made you laugh today?" or "What would you do if you had a tail?" These simple questions open up a world of laughter, curiosity, and deeper connections. From dinner time to sleepy time, the Daily Family Conversation Starter is your key to creating memories that will last a lifetime. Don't wait to transform your family's daily routine into an adventure of discovery and fun. Grab your copy of the Daily Family Conversation Starter today, wherever books are sold.
This is Empowering Homeschool Conversations, provided by Sped Homeschool, a nonprofit that empowers families to home educate diverse learners. To learn more, visit spedhomeschool.com.
That's great, Annie. Thanks for sharing that. We battle a lot with ourselves and with just what we've been told is right. You know, we have to confront a lot of lies that we've been told. And a lot of those lies just come from societal ways of doing things, and we don't even think of them as being untruths. We just are like, well, that's just what they're experts, right? They should know. Yeah. And
you know what's funny about that? It just came to mind. When Alyssa was very young and she was getting a lot of therapy services, I used to be asked to speak as a parent to therapy groups about how they should interact with parents and think of parents as the experts, you know?
Really?
And here I am, like, I'm telling these experts that, and then I didn't even apply it to my own life in the long run I learned, but I had to go a little bit around the bend to get there.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? We do compartmentalize a lot. I find myself a lot when I'm like rereading over talks I've given. I'm like, oh man, I need that advice. Did I actually have that advice? I don't remember ever having that really in my head. So, yeah. So, Leilani, would you like to go next?
Yeah, I was just going to say, what's funny about what you said is I think a lot of my talks or whatever I talk on YouTube is just a reflection of what I'm trying to learn in the moment.
Yes.
Uh-huh. And the things that I'm struggling with in the moment. So the one thing that I think that I struggled with the most is this idea of I have to do it all as a parent and as an educator. And so, you know, I was kind of thinking back, like when my first was born, I was actually still teaching. But when I finally decided to resign and stay home with my two boys, I felt like I had, you know, of course, to be the mom, the cook, the chef, the cleaning. But at that point in their life, they needed that. So letting go of that over the years and allowing our community and other people feed into our lives is a huge release. And I think that really started, you know, clicking with my mother-in-law, who kind of stepped in to help me really specifically after Naomi was born, who also has Down syndrome. But she, I don't know, Annie, if your daughter had the heart surgery or not. Mine did. And mine was in the hospital for a month. And during that time, my mother-in-law had to take over all of my homeschooling with the other three. And I had to just release that to her. And even though she didn't follow the curriculum to the T, I realized it took a while that there was things that she was planting in my children's lives that they needed educationally to grow, which wasn't necessarily what I thought. And so it's been like this slow process of relying on other people, family members, people from our congregation, and even with Naomi and all of the therapies that we work with, what's really nice about homeschooling is we can pick our therapist. And I think I've been pretty picky. And I think we have some of the best therapists that understand. I have one therapist that is a former homeschooler. So she understands homeschooling, and they pick up on these blind spots that we as parents don't have educationally, also, you know, behaviorally, especially when they hit middle school and they get themselves in in trouble. I mean, it's a reality. It's true. Like, yep. It's true. And even with homeschool, even though they're not in a school setting, they could be, and I think this is so good for them because there are things that you do in your home that, and you blind spots, right? Blind spots. Mm-hmm. And then they go out and they're socializing with their friends, whether it's in a sports homeschool co-op, whether it's the congregation, all of a sudden they do something that is just completely out of line. And then just the community somehow comes together and corrects them. But it's a community that you trust because why would you go there if you didn't trust it? Like, because you have these options as a homeschool parent. And we've had a couple of those situations. It's just so interesting how God just brings those people and those situations to kind of help nurture our kids. And realizing that I have to embrace those moments and allow other people to correct my kids, allow other people, like for example, my daughter, like I love math. Okay. I'm one of the weird ones. I love math and I love teaching my kids math. And my daughter was really, really struggling with math. And for whatever reason, every time I sat down to work with her on math, it was just rebellion and shutdown. And so it was like, it was awful. It was like awful, awful, awful. When I set her in a co-op class for math and she just clung on to the teacher and absorbed just math and learned it. And I'm sitting back here going, but I love math. I want to homeschool my kid, but realizing she wasn't going to learn from me for whatever reason. I don't know, but I had to just embrace that experience for her. And, you know, another thing that's happened with our household is allowing between me and my husband, right? Well, first of all, we're like crazy busy and we have to juggle therapies and just taking my daughter to dance, my son to track meet. We have a homeschool. It's amazing what we have. Homeschool track group. They do cross country and running every morning at 6 a.m. and, you know, therapies and dance class and all these things that we do, we have to juggle with me and my husband. And things are getting harder. I think that things get harder too as they get older. It's so weird. I didn't think that, but you also have to let go more. But my allowing myself to step down more and allowing my husband to step up more and just over the course of this year specifically, my husband has actually taken on homeschooling my kids in certain subjects one of them, Bible, for example, he has taken on the role of being their Bible teacher. And he loves that. I love that too. And I wanted to do it, but he just does a better job of it. And he's stepping up with like discipline and mentoring my kids and just me stepping back and letting him rise up. He's really become more of the man of the house in our household. And it's amazing what God is doing. Like, I wish I could show you, but he doesn't like to be on camera either. So that's another, but it's really cool. Like, God is redeeming all of that by building a community and having my husband step up. And me step down and let God do his work.
Well, that's awesome. I can see a lot of like nodding and yes, and agreement with you, because we do try to be that Lone Ranger. And if you got to the point now where you're at in your process, you'd be killing yourself. And actually, I actually had a shutdown. I had a mental breakdown in the middle of my homeschooling. So, unfortunately it took me that long to figure out I needed help. But you just can't do it all. But there is community out there, and what a good reminder. God made us for community. He made us to work together. We are not to do life alone. And he will teach you that lesson if you haven't learned it yet.
Yeah. And it's like with homeschooling, because they're at home in your house doesn't necessarily mean that you are their only teacher.
Yes. So that is such a good lesson.
It never all depends on us, but we sure do get to feeling that way.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. That's why I was saying, like, there's those cultural pressures that we can sometimes come into homeschooling with, like, you know, our parents. I have parents that I work with now that the parents are telling them, are you sure? Are you sure your child's learning? Are you sure they're, you know, and there's pressures.
Right.
And we do that to ourselves as well. And I know I did that. And Peggy, I appreciate you sharing that breakdown, because that's what I had too, sadly. Mm. And it was pretty bad. It was pretty bad. And I just didn't recognize along the way I needed help. I needed to ask for help. I can't do this on my own. I don't know all of this. I am so much better at that in my life now, just going, I don't know. And it's okay not to know, because God knows.
Right.
And there Absolutely. Are people that people put in your path. But that is something that I think part of my coaching and consulting now comes from, that piece of having that breakdown and knowing that there are a lot of us out there who think we better know what we're doing and we have to kind of put a show on, like we've got this together, when a lot of times we don't. And there's no shame in that. It's the shame piece that keeps us silent and keeps us in our silence. And we really need to come forward and, you know, be a part of like these wonderful YouTube channels and, you know, what also Leilani has, and just sharing with others and each other and hearing as much as we can, but not being afraid or shameful to say, yeah, this is hard. And then if you mm-hmm. pop a little guy or girl in there with some learning challenges, diagnosed with different disabilities, boy, you really have it. You know, you really have your calling laid out there. That is not a loner job. Don't even try.
Yeah. I want to put a plug right here, because Leilani and I had a 1-hour discussion just about the transition with her mother-in-law. Oh, and yeah. It was an amazing conversation about how you just had to allow her to come in, and some of the battles you two have had.
Oh, yeah. It's amazing she still has hair.
From stress.
Yeah. Yeah, and amazing I have hair. It's pulling our hair out, like, you know. Just
yeah. Yeah, there's always someone who's going to cast doubt on, you know, where you're headed with all this or how you're doing it, or, you know, and if they're not casting doubt, you know, we have a voice inside our own heads that does that. And, you know, we have our own expectations about how things will go. And then when it's not quite that way, or sometimes this way, like in left field, and we start doubting and just the pressure we put on ourselves with that is incredible. And we need to really just understand we are in this for the long haul. This is not something you're going to see of these results are just going to, you know, 1 year and everything's going to be, you know, perfect. This is a long-term thing where you don't see results for years.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Stephanie, would you like to share next? I know you've had some bumps in the road and transitions and changes in your homeschooling journey. And I think this would transition really good into that part of your story.
Yes. My kids have done public school, private school, and homeschool, and not necessarily by my choice. And that's where kind of God comes in and redeems everything. But so I had 4 boys, and if they had been in public school at one point, they would have been in K-5. Okay? So they're all close together. Wow. And they all have differing abilities and gifts and things like that. They're fun to teach, though. I've totally enjoyed that. But by the time my daughter came along, about 4.5 years after that group of 4 boys, it was becoming a lot, and the boys were getting older, middle school, kind of going into high school, and I was having trouble. It was just too much. And the straw that broke the camel's back was my special needs daughter, because she lived in fight or flight mode. She's nonverbal, and she just yelled all the time, like vocal tics. And we called her, it's kind of weird. We say it sounds like a pterodactyl, and everyone knows what that is, but, you know, no one's ever heard a pterodactyl in real life. So I've never quite understood how we all know what a pterodactyl
is. Jurassic Park.
Probably it. And so it was just too much, and I couldn't see it. I was probably should have gotten help, but I didn't. But there had virtually no support. There wasn't support coming from the church, from our families, because mine was in another state and my husband's wasn't, you know, just in the picture that much. and, you know, not even from the church. So, and then the older brother started going through things. So all of a sudden it was just too much. I couldn't see it, but my husband could. So over a series of years, he peeled them out of homeschool one at a time. And I was devastated because I love homeschooling and I loved it then and I love it now. And it's been, it was just like heartbreaking. And then that God used my husband to take him away from me, you know, out of the homeschool. That was even like more painful for me. And so it was kind of the middle of second grade where we started put my daughter in homeschool. She was the last one to go into homeschool, which was, you know, made me happy because I was working with her and I was, you know, I thought I was doing a pretty good job. And she got put into public school and for several years. Public school had positives and negatives. The negatives, I'll go with those first. She was nonverbal and they had no communication system at all, no way of teaching communication. AAC devices were fairly new. AAC devices on an iPad were new. Okay, AAC devices have been around for a long time, but the school wasn't used to having to teach all these kids, these nonverbal kids. So what happened was I tried, said, okay, well, they have a program for the deaf, and she knew probably 300 signs going into public school. We had learned them from using Signing Time. And she did not, the school didn't want to do sign language with her because they're like, well, no one else can understand her. And that was a good, you know, a valid point, but I was just desperate that she communicate somehow and she already knew 300 signs. Mm-hmm. So then I thought, well, they have ESOL. And I went and looked up all the legal requirements and, you know, they had to have a certain number of hours at this level one if they were just beginners. And once they became intermediate language learners, they reduced the number of hours. So I tried to get them to do it that way. Yeah, this is like years. I had so many IEP meetings and I had some training from just a place I found online that said basically an IEP meeting is a legal requirement from the IDEA law. Mm-hmm. So if you want to get anything done, the only thing they listen to is the law. So find legal cases that relate to what you're trying to do and present those. And so I tried that, you know, backwards and forwards and all that stuff. The thing about that, though, is because of that, I found out later, much later, that that's why I always had someone from the Office of Compliance in all of my IEP meetings, because I was quoting the law. And so they had to have someone from the legal department there. It was kind of interesting. I eventually became friends with them and got a job offer from their legal department. From the Office of Compliance. And just the next part is because we went to mediation with the state. We didn't file a lawsuit, but we chose mediation. I had hired an advocate and she came in. She said, just go to mediation. This isn't going anywhere. So this was at the end of elementary school. Moving into middle school, we went to mediation. So I started the year off, all new teachers, everything, as that mom. I go to mediation and there were all requirements put on the teachers because of that. Eventually we, you know, worked it out. I always had a really good relationship with all the friends, and where God stepped in, where I thought, you know, he was like ripping these kids away from me into public school. All of her teachers were Christians. God put her in one class she was going to go into middle school. I talked to the teacher and it was obvious it wasn't going to work. I won't go into details. It wasn't going to work. And so they put her with a brand new teacher. And the first one was probably, based on our interactions, not a Christian. And this other one was. And she worked out great. I found that, in general, the teachers were really good. But when you start getting up the hierarchy, you start getting to people who have a political interest and a financial interest and what happens with your kid. And that's when I started, you know, hitting problems. But because I had gone to mediation, I had like 6 or 8 IEP meetings a year. Every year she was in middle school. It was, yeah, I got to know the people in the Office of Compliance. We were actually kind of friends. I'd bring, you know, homemade toffee at Christmas time to the meetings and all that stuff. But what happened at the end of that was COVID. So she's going into high school, COVID happens. and I get to see what's going on in the classrooms. I kind of knew what was going on in the classrooms, and my daughter was really stressed by public school. I could tell that because she started, there were just significant signs of stress in her life. So we started doing online school, and I got to see what the other students were doing. And the thing that really, well, first of all, after one semester, I pulled her out of public school, and with my husband's blessing, all the other kids were graduated by then, and he was okay with it. But when I saw what they were doing, first of all, I asked her teacher, so she would have been in a moderate ID contained classroom. Intellectual disability is ID. They basically said the kids in that class were expected after high school to go into either a long-term care facility or a day program. So all they taught them, you know, life skills that would fit those life scenarios. They didn't do a lot with academics, and but they still have to have academics on the IEPs because that's what goes on. That's what goes on in the law. The thing that really got to me where I was like, no, we're not going to do, I'm going to homeschool. We're not going to do high school. Is there was this one poor, well, she was a woman by that time. She was 22 because in the public school system, you age out at 22 for special needs. She was still working on the number 5 in math, and she was working on sight words in reading. Sorry. Sometimes just gets
No, I mean, these are connected to us. Our kids are so precious to us that, yeah, we do get emotional over it.
And she was there, and you know that was in her IEP, learn your numbers, for 13. Well, she would have been in school for 16 years by then. Yeah. And I was like, whew. So we pulled her out. We had to de-school for a while,
yeah.
Which is the case, because as a matter of fact, she had lost the ability to go up and down stairs a few months earlier. And I always suspected it was from stress, but I couldn't prove it. You know, we had an MRI, we checked for depth perception, checked for all these things. 2 days after I told her you don't have to go back to public school, she started using stairs again. School was just so stressful, and I didn't know that. You know, I could see some signs, but anyway, that's so God brought her out of that. So,
yeah,
you know, I had to put her in public school, and I still homeschooled, I still after school, I still summer school. We had lots of fun doing lots of, we have to do all the fun stuff at home, and I still kept her learning. And you know, when she was in sixth grade, we went to a specialist for speech. The lady who developed the Speech EZ program. We went out to see her in Arizona. And she goes, did you know that she can read at a first grade level? And I was like, no, I didn't know how to test it. So I told the school that. And they were like, no, they didn't believe me. And at this point, she'd been in public school for like 2 or 3 years. And they didn't know she could, they didn't know it either. It's like, you know, so there were lots of signs. And I do want to say this about the public school system, because I don't have any animosity towards it. I know it's important for some people, that's all you can do. And it was obviously something I had to do based on, you know, my husband's wishes and I guess God's wishes. But I did take matters into my own hand by really trying to work with the school to get things that she needed, and also to continue to do my homeschooling, you know, after schooling and summer schooling for the things that were important to me. You know, there were certain things that were important to the school, but there were other things that were important to me. So I kept those going with me. And so she's home for all of high school, and that's really exciting to me. And God's blessed that. And what happened was after she came out of that environment, I was like, well, she was pretty much in what I call perpetual kindergarten, you know, always working on ABCs, 1, 2, 3s in the IEP area. I was like, I don't want that anymore. She needs a real education. I want her to be able to, when someone's saying something to her, I want her to be able to comprehend what they're talking about. Like if they're talking about, like when COVID hit, COVID and disease and spike proteins and all that stuff, that was like in everybody's conversations during that time. It would be nice. And it would be nice to keep it calmer. I'm sorry, I read something over there. If my microphone is bad, raise your hand and I'll switch to a different one. Is okay. Sorry, I got an issue about feedback. Now I forgot where I was in my story. I wanted her to know things that were going on around her that she could, even if she couldn't verbally participate in the conversation, because even when someone learns AAC, it's still very hard to keep up because few people are patient enough to wait for you to expand all the things, type in all the words or use all the little signs on the program. So I ended up developing curriculum for her because she would not be lost much. So my vision for her after graduation was totally different than what the public schools was. So I'm very glad that I got her homeschool and then I created these things and now I'm able to share them with other people. And I feel like that's what God's called me to do at this point.
Yeah.
Emotional.
It really is. Our kids are part of us, and it becomes difficult when we have to, well, like you said, your husband coming in and they have a whole different perspective than we do, thankfully, because, yeah, there were times where my husband said, it's time for you to leave right now. and I'm glad I listened.
It was hard for a long time. I held it against him, recognizing it was probably God's hand, but still holding it against him personally for a few years before I gave it up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's hard to see when our plans aren't God's plans and how he uses circumstances and other things to shift so many other things around so that we get realigned in the right place. And our kids do too. I mean, this is their story as well. And we often forget that we're just trying to keep everything, that we have control over, we think we have control over, in place. And then your kids become adults and you realize you really had no control and you really don't have any control anymore. So, well, thank you for sharing, Stephanie. Anybody else have any comments on that? Or all right, well, I'm going to share
I'll just add one quick thing. From the other conversation with, I think Leilani was talking about needing to, give in to others' help, to accept that. And just that feeling that everything depends on us. We do sometimes exclude our husbands, from the decision-making and things like that. It can be hard to swallow when they have a different idea, but God did put us in those relationships, that partnership and leadership from them. And so it's important that they take the ownership as well. So, but it is hard when there's some difference. Thankfully, Stephanie, you can see in hindsight, how it worked out for good.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was a long time coming, but I finally came around to God's way.
Well, I'm going to share next. And actually, I'm the last one to go, aren't I? So mine ends up being an error of omission. Actually, a busyness is kind of more what I would attribute it to. Life gets crazy. And, when you're homeschooling, and a lot of you attested to, doing lots of stuff and trying to keep it all together. And Don, you and I both share this background of having a nervous breakdown. Well, my homeschooling year started out, they started out chaotic and awful because it wasn't my choice. And my son basically got kicked out of school. It was my only choice. But I embraced it with everything I had. My husband calls me a pit bull when I come to anything, because if I get anything in my clenches, I will not let it go. And homeschooling was the same thing. I just went all in and not even really knowing what I was doing. And until the point that life snowballed on me. And I you know, you can keep so much in track when your kids are little, but as they get older, those subjects become more difficult. And I never had understanding of what ELA was at all. Teaching my children to read was like beyond me. I used whatever curriculums I could for that part, but then writing came along, and I am a horrendous writer. I love math. I love, you know, science. So I really spent time doing that and not a whole lot of time of doing the rest. And so when it came to writing, I bought good curriculum. I used it for a while. You know, we kind of got through it, but I never required any of my kids to ever write a paper. And I hate saying that, but because life was so crazy, in the midst of our homeschooling, we actually did foster care for three of my siblings. That was an emergency situation. And that threw our whole life upside down. We were living on a farm. We had no services. We lived in a very rural community for the end of my boys' homeschooling, the middle of my daughter's. So really, there was not a lot other than me. And on top of that, I'd put on top, well, let's raise our own meat. Let's raise our own vegetables. And you know, all these other things that we were doing, which taught my kids some really good life lessons, but it didn't teach them how to write. And so as I was graduating my kids and realizing you have no writing skills at all. And, you know, my oldest said, I don't need that. He wrote me a couple emails. He was good with that because he was going to go into welding. And my second son, he said, I'm not going to college, so I don't need to learn how to write. And then my daughter thought she was going to be a tattoo artist. So I'm like, okay, we're good with this. But then lo and behold, my oldest comes back and says, Mom, I'm going to go to college. I want to be an engineer. Oh gosh, you have to take English. And then my daughter just started college this last year. And by God's grace, they both got A's all the way through English. And I look back at what God did in that process, in the busyness, the craziness, and all the things that were going on, is that He instilled in me read out louds, audiobooks. We did lots of storytelling. So my kids were actually writing, or they were learning to write through those venues without me even realizing what that was, because I was just so green in what all of this English language learning stuff was anyways. and they became able to communicate. And really that's what writing is. Just by the grace of God and the circumstances, but they also were able to learn a lot of lessons, real life lessons that we would not have got through any other circumstance. And so I just realized, you know, there are some things that we just aren't going to be able to teach our kids. And I think that really hit me when I was graduating my oldest and I was sending him off to Florida. And we were in Minnesota still. We were moving to Texas like that while he was there. And I'm like, you can't go. You don't know everything. And God so quietly said to me, but Peggy, you don't know everything either. You know, and just that realization, we just won't know it all and we won't do it all. But in the end, He can make all things good and He can perfect that. So that's my redemption story.
I love hearing that, because God does step in the gap of our inadequacies. We all have them, you know, we should expect them, but He steps in the gap for us.
Absolutely. Yeah, He does. And I think we spend a lot of time just trying to figure out where our gaps are instead of just trusting them.
A verse came to my head, Peggy, when you shared that, and it was, "For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you and not to harm you, plans to give you hope and a future." And I know, like, in my own plans for homeschooling and my own reasons for doing that, maybe they weren't always the best, because in my journey, I think there was a bit of this thing of, I'm going to be the best parent, I'm going to have the best kids. I'm going to, you know, like, my aspirations were always holy. God had a plan and has had a plan for my children. And the way they turned out, like, I never planned that for them, but
right. Knew.
And it's just such a thing when you can rest in that God has a plan for your children. God knows, you know, even in your case where you were like, oh my gosh, you didn't learn the ABCs of writing. He built that in them through, you know, really it's language, vocabulary, comprehension, but it's introduction to the spoken word, right? Mm-hmm. And it's when kiddos don't get a lot of that language, that's when they don't have ideas and creativity. And obviously yours did. So that was mm-hmm. great.
Yeah. Yeah.
That kind of reminded me a little bit of what we're going through right now. with the English and the language arts, one of my children that, I mean, I love writing. I think it's really important, but one of my children, like they finished up one of their curriculum for writing. And I was like, hold on, we need to go backwards. And I've actually had to go back a couple of years, and I have to keep reminding myself it's okay. It's better to go backwards than trying to push them forward and stay with the, because the teacher in me is like benchmarks, you know. Mm. It's better to pull them backwards, get that foundation laid, and then let them move from there. So,
yeah. Yeah, we had to do the same thing in math. One of my kids suffered from severe depression, and mental illness shuts off learning. It just, nothing happens. And I realized there were so many gaps in math that we had to go back 3 years and just catch up with where all those gaps were. And, I mean, he got to where he needed to be. And, but yeah, you can't just kind of keep going, you know, just push it all to the side and say, we're just moving on. Cause it just gets worse. Yeah.
I have a quick little teeny story. Recently, I was working with a family and coaching a little guy, a homeschool guy, and going into the home and sitting down and trying to help him, you know, just navigate his day and how, you know, what's his internal schedule like, just putting all those pieces together. And honestly, like I walked away at the end and I really felt like, you know, mom needs more coaching than he does. And that was kind of my idea, but I think it was too much for her. So we subsided from all of that. And I thought, wow, that was a fail. You know, that was a fail on my part. I didn't get through to this guy. I didn't see these blazing colors at the end and, you know, my success story of this beautiful impact. Right. And it was kind of a, you know, a squash to my work a little bit. And I'm like, what, you know? And I just got an email or text message, I mean, from the mother this morning. And she goes, I just want you to know all that work that you did with my son, it paid off. And it was just like a matter of time and months even before we saw any of the results. She goes, but he's starting to put those systems in place and those ideas, and he's really rising up. And I just want to thank you so much for everything that you did. And I was like, what? You know, but so you never know the seeds that you're building in someone. And I know as a teacher, you guys know that sometimes we want to see instant results. We want to see benchmarks, right? And things by the end of the year, like, here's the growth. And we have to ask ourselves, is that, that's not always the way God works in our lives. You know, it takes years. I'm a knucklehead. I'm like the slowest in the tool in the shed. I don't even know how to say that. That has no purpose, right? But I know that to him, he sees me as finished. And he sees all those seeds that are being planted, like you said earlier, Peggy, that we don't even know what's happening right now for the future use of God. I mean, this may be my last day on this earth, but to get a story like that months later, and honestly, you guys, I really walked away and thought, that was the toughest case I've had in a long time. Like, I don't think I made a dent in that case life. And to get that, I could read it to you right now. And what she said was, oh, it impacted him so much. It was almost like I needed to be removed for him to rise up on his own. But he needed some of those tools. So never, ever underestimate, right? Even a day that doesn't seem good or well, or what have we accomplished, you know, at the end of the day. because a lot is happening.
Yeah, that's very good, Dawn. And I think we let a lot of that grief and all of that condemnation just distract us from the joy that's in front of us, mm-hmm. that we could be experiencing all the time. And yeah. we let that distract us from what is right in front of us, our kids, our day. Yeah, so good.
Good. Yeah.
Any other closing comments that you guys have on this discussion? This was good. This is really good. I really enjoyed this and look forward to our next hot topic that we're going to discuss. So thank you all for joining us here on Empowering Homeschool Conversations. We look forward, myself, I'm Peggy Ployer with my co-hosts, Stephanie Buckwalter, Don Jackson, Annie Yorty, and Leilani Melendez. And we'll be continuing to have these very empowering conversations around homeschooling and homeschooling diverse learners to just encourage you and equip you and to share with you wisdom that we all wish we would have had before and wish we have now. And so it'll just keep us all growing as a community and just empower you on your homeschooling journey. So thank you all and God bless. And we'll see you next time right here on Empowering Homeschool Conversations. Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
I want to take just a second to thank the team at Life Audio for their partnership with us on this podcast. If you go to lifeaudio.com, you'll find dozens of other faith-centered podcasts in their network. They've got shows about prayer, Bible study, parenting, and more.
This has been Empowering Homeschool Conversations.
What happens when a writer and former history teacher goes toe-to-toe with his best friend, a nationally touring stand-up comedian? Total carnage, that's what. Two men enter and two men leave because that's how it works.
Actually, you get hilarious, real, and insightful conversations about life, history, culture, faith, and everything in between.
Join me, comedian Johnny W., and my pal, author, and speaker John Driver for Talk About That at lifeaudio.com or wherever you get your podcasts.